This. Oh. Self you. You was gonna trigger me.
That was great.
I hate you, Scott. Dallas.
That was amazing. All right, here we go.
He's also pissing himself.
All right, composure. What's up, guys? Welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. I'm Scott McNally. Our programming is brought to you by TrueNutrition.com. You can use our code ADVICES for some additional savings. Everything's third-party tested, high-quality supplements from a company that you can trust. Dave Crossland, we've got all sorts of stuff to talk about today. What the hell's going on, man? What was that? What are you talking about here? What's happening? You're in a mood today.
I have lost the fluffy end of my microphone, and it is all gold.
Let me see what that microphone looks like. That's a snazzy microphone. I like that mic.
So, and my wife was just asking me if I needed my fuzzy end. See? My fuzzy end. So, I'll put my fuzzy end back on the microphone.
All right.
Look, if you're not going to be professional, then neither am I. So,
Wait, what was that? Was that supposed to be like the finger? That's like the peace sign.
No, that's the peace sign.
Yeah.
That's the fuck off sign.
Fuck off. That's
and that's the screw you sign.
Language.
Would you guys do this?
He said it first, Mama.
Do you guys do this one? What is it like the?
No.
No. What is? Okay. Never mind.
That is a sort of European.
Okay.
One.
Okay. All right. Fair enough, guys. All right. We've got a bunch of stuff here. We're starting the show with steroids in the news. We've got a situation here. This is 8. County deputies, they work at the jail here in Wichita, Kansas, Sedgwick County. They've been taken off the force for now. They're on leave. All of them are in trouble for steroids, Dave. So we've got a topic here today, which is going to be steroids in law enforcement. And I think that'll be cool because we kind of both have our own interesting different perspectives, being the legality of steroids here, you know, are totally illegal versus in the UK you can technically. Oh, so what's the deal? Can you know they're legal over there? Can a cop use steroids in the UK, first of all?
No, I believe it's written into the police handbook that they're not allowed to, but each individual force. So our police force, even though we're one country, our police forces are divided up regionally. And as a result of that, I mean, like they have their own budgets and their own legislation involving around how they employ their staff. So control of use within a job is handled through your employment contract.
Yeah.
So if a police officer is caught using steroids, he will be disciplined under his contract of employment. Obviously, it's non-criminal, so there'll be no criminal charges taken. If a police officer is caught supplying, then he would be prosecuted both criminally and he would also go through a disciplinary tribunal at work as well. So he would face two trials, effectively, one for his job and one criminal. So, but where there's a lot of grey and where I've done quite a few of police usage cases, unfortunately or fortunately for the officers in a lot of cases, the police forces are a bit useless when it comes to following their own rules.
Okay.
So pretty much every police force in the UK has this policy where if you have a substance misuse problem and you admit it, particularly if it's a first offence, or what they class as single time usage, which means you've not effectively what that means is you've not been caught before because they can't prove whether you've used it before or not.
Yeah.
Then they will offer counseling support and it will be a non-disciplinary, anonymous procedure.
Okay.
What they often do with steroids, particularly because they have a bit of a bee in their bonnet about their own lads using, is they seem to forget this element of their drug policies. Now, because it's not criminal, we're only fighting on a trade dispute. We're only fighting on it's an employment tribunal. So the first argument back is, you've not followed drug policy. My client has stated that this is a one-time offence. They can't prove otherwise. So they can only prove that they tested positive at that one point in time. There's no misconduct within his conduct within the police force. We've not got an issue. He's not gone mad and shot somebody. There's nothing happened untoward with his actual policing ability.
Yeah.
And he's willing to come to you now for support and guidance, and you can't offer it him because you don't have the facilities to do that.
Right.
So they usually end up at that point. It will go so far, and then when it starts to go in front of the chief inspector, which is where it starts getting to the point where if it doesn't resolve at that point, it goes to court for a civil case. It's usually at that point when they start going, yeah, okay, you shut up, don't do it fucking again, and we'll shut up. Because they know legally they're in a real back hole because they failed to do what they promised to do in their drug policies. But they will apply a huge amount of pressure to an officer prior to that point to try and get them to just resign and leave. And what they'll generally say is, if you piss off now, we'll give you a neutral reference. It won't affect anything, but you just leave the force. And that is generally what lads will do because they don't realize they can fight it on the grounds that the policy is so vague and all over the place. I mean, to give you an example, I did a case for two lads that had been caught using pro-hormones. Now, obviously, they tested positive for steroids
Okay.
because pro-hormones, precursor hormones, they'll be steroids once they've entered the system. Now, in both cases, the policy for this current actual police force said that they were not allowed to misuse pro-hormones. So it didn't say they couldn't use.
Yeah.
And so we, in defense, we asked for a definition of misuse because it wasn't explained anywhere.
Yeah.
And we said in both cases, these lads had used these drugs as instructed on the label on the packets.
Yeah, would you think that should be enough right there then? Did they get
And so it got kicked out.
Okay, good,
They couldn't
good,
do anything with it.
good.
Because the policy didn't define misuse, which it needs to. And this is one of the things, if a police force, which one recently has, changes their drug policy to include steroids because it's been previously omitted, they then have the duty to notify everybody of that policy change and explain and educate them as to why. So this is another one where they've fallen foul in the past because they've gone, well, look, the policy came out 6 months ago. You're not allowed to use steroids as part of your employment contract. Yeah, but you haven't told me that.
Yeah.
So if you haven't told me that, how am I supposed to know?
Yeah.
So it's dealt with generally within the UK under employment law. We're seeing more and more companies start to write in that employees are not allowed to use steroids in their policies.
Interesting. Okay.
And we're starting to see more and more employers include steroid testing on their drug testing profiles.
Okay. So in this case here in the US, so things are going to be different. A, you know, steroids are illegal here. So the in itself, A, you're breaking the law, right? If you're using steroids. And so that in itself is going to be a problem, regardless of the way that the system is set up. Now, I did have the opportunity to talk with a police officer here in the United States, and he explained to me a little bit about how the system works for him. I know that it's going to be different from precinct to precinct, but he did give me some insight. And now in this situation, suspended with pay, the personnel included seven men and one woman, 25-year-old woman. I wonder if she was a competitor. The men were 26, 27, 27, 28, 28, 29, and 40, and a 25-year-old woman. These were all guards of the Sedgwick County jail system there. He said the officer in charge there, the sheriff, he said he announced Wednesday that the illegal activity had been going on for a year and was contained within the group of deputies. He said the drugs have not been introduced into the facility. Now, here's something interesting. So, like I said, I had the opportunity to talk to a cop, and what he had said was the first year of employment as a police officer, you're kind of under It's like you're under like a temporary employment thing almost. So
Yeah.
they're watching for you to mess up.
It's probationary.
Yeah, probationary. And in that period of time, that testing can be a lot more regular. You know, they can keep up on you a lot more. And then after that, then you have basically a union that you're going to be a part of. And now the interesting thing was he found in his union. Now this guy, he's a bodybuilder. He's a natural bodybuilder. But of course, he's interested in knowing, you know, all the ins and outs of these regulations and laws. He said that the testing that they have, if he were to get tested, it only covered, and he read these specific points to me, it only covered like recreational drugs. So they said, you know, basically like marijuana and PCP, cocaine, all that kind of stuff. It didn't say anything about steroids. So he feels that if there ever was a situation, that it maybe not legally, but at least within the rules of employment, they don't have anything specifically saying that you can't use anabolic steroids and that they're going to be testing for that.
But they do. I can guarantee you they'll have something that says that a police officer is not allowed to engage in criminal activity.
It does say something. There was another clause in there. It said something now, and that's what I was thinking too. It said something like you can't ingest any type of medications that are prescription or illicit,
Which it is.
you know, without the prescription of a doctor. So I could see that being part of it.
There will be that element with actual drug use, but I guarantee somewhere in that police legislation for employment, it will state that a police officer will face dismissal and disciplinary charges if he engages in a criminal activity
Yeah.
or a conduct unbecoming to a police officer.
Yeah. Now, listen, man, if I was a cop, now I realize. So we listen to this, and I'll see if I can edit a little piece of this in. You know, they go to a doctor here who's an expert, and Dave and I are listening to this before the show. The doctor, you know, initially he says, like, oh, yeah, steroids can cause issues with your heart. You can get blood clots and stuff. And he said, and they can cause a great deal of rage to the point that you may murder someone. And he said that matter of factly, like, you know, heart, you know, blood clots, heart attacks, murder, you know, these are just a few of the things that can happen. I thought that that was kind of funny. But that said, man, I mean, I've known a lot of cops here that, well, we'll just say guys that are like, you know, national level bodybuilders,
Look,
you
well,
know.
come on. There's one that stands out a mile, Ronnie Coleman.
Right.
You're telling me that this thing did not know he was using gear when he had to have his fucking body armor specially made?
Right.
You know, his usage was actually costing his force extra money because everything had to be made to fit him.
And listen, if I was a cop, man, especially if I was like a guy out on the streets, I would want to have as much of an edge as possible, you know, even if that means like, you know, high-end TRT and growth hormone for optimal recovery. I mean, I want to be like 100%. There's no question about it. I want to be strong, you know.
I think the big one of the big issues with this particular case and why it's probably hit the press so much is it's a supply case. It's not just a usage case. This is almost a supply ring. This is a group of people, seven in total, I think you said, didn't you? That were supplying and using steroids. Obviously, because of the position that they are in, though they have stated at this point that they aren't supplying to within the prison, that would be a major, major concern. Because you've got a drug dealer working as a prison officer, which, when you take away the subject matter of what the drug is, that's what it is. You have got somebody who is selling an illegal drug and using an illegal drug who's in a place of significant trust in detaining other criminals, but they themselves are criminals in the eyes of the law. Your personal opinion of whether steroids should be illegal or not doesn't come into this. As it stands at the moment, the law is usage is illegal and supply is illegal. And I think that's where this case is much more hard hitting, is because the case of the Ronnie Coleman, for argument, Ronnie Coleman, for example, his boss must have known. There's no way. But they decided to view it on a point of view of a pride within their force because he was a champ and bodybuilder. And he's not risking anything in the sense of he's not supplying.
He's
So
not bringing that shit to work, and selling it to his coworkers, you know?
Where in this case we have supply, which obviously, if it had been one prison guard that was using, I bet you would never have seen a thing about it on the news.
I bet you're right. Ryan Veal mentioned, what is this here? He says they ask during employment if you used steroids outside of a script. So I'm sure that there are, you know, there's a lot of questions, you know, involved with that. But I think you're right, man. I think that if you like I think of another guy, but you know, I obviously don't want to put him on the spot. He was a very well-known bodybuilder 10 years ago here in Michigan. And he was very successful at the state level, very successful on the national level. And this is, Dave, this is longer than 10 years ago now, actually. This is before there were any other divisions. So that's when being a national level top three bodybuilder consistently show after show, that was a big freaking deal. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you were one of the top in the country because there was no other federations to be top in.
Yeah, yeah. This was a situation where if you went to his gym, they had a banner with saying that he trained here. Like, that's how cool it was, you know? And there's no question in my mind, man, that the people had to know what was up, people that worked with him. So, I don't know. I'll be interested to see how this unfolds. But I think
from a colleague point of view, I think there's a big difference, or there's a big step when you go from using gear in a role, even if you're not supposed to supplying gear.
Yeah, you're right.
Using gear is for your personal gain, to achieve your personal goals. There's no financial incentive there. You're not making money off other people.
Yeah.
I think when it becomes supply, it changes for a lot of people whether they can overlook that or not. Because now you're making money off this activity, which is illegal. Right. And that sort of, for a lot of people, will change the perspective of it all. You know, most people don't give a shit what you do in your own time as long as it doesn't affect them. But when you start selling a drug, irrespective of what it is, that changes not only does it change where you are in things, but it changes the way you as a professional are perceived to people outside.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I can see where officers would be more likely to turn around and say, you know what, there's a bit of gear, I'm not bothered.
Right.
It doesn't affect me.
Right.
But when that same officer is selling steroids publicly, it's like, well, no, he makes me look fucking bad now, because it's like we're all doing things we shouldn't be doing because he's now doing something that's a bit more above and beyond. So, you know, that might be why certain officers in certain roles have been left alone, because they've never brought their position into ill repute with their own usage.
All right. I'm going to shift gears here because we have a study. And Dave is, guys, I'm going to warn you right now, Dave is not happy about this study. And we're going to get his perspective. So Victoria saw this floating around. She said, hey, you guys might appreciate this. It might be something you want to talk about on the show. And I sent it to Dave, and Dave said, this is shite. First of all, I got to ask you, what's the difference between shit, S-H-I-T, and shit, S-H-I-T-E?
Well, first of all, it's not shit, S-H-I-T-E. It's shite.
What's shite?
Same as shit, just spelled differently.
that's exclusively a UK thing? Is this what we're
doing? Probably more even a northern thing, yeah. To be honest. It's probably more of a regional thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, you have, it's shit.
Yeah.
Things are shite.
Okay.
It's almost like a plural.
I think I never noticed that.
It's almost like a plural version of shit.
Okay.
Because generally you have a thing that's shit. You don't have things that are shit. Things are shite.
Huh. Okay.
I don't know if that's technically correct, but that's how I've always viewed it anyway.
All right. Well, nonetheless, here's
this was the biggest pile of shite I've written in a long time.
So this is anabolic androgenic steroid abuse in the United Kingdom. An update. The increasing popularity of anabolic androgenic steroids. First, they talk about what steroids are. Then they give an introduction about health issues and the limited studies that are done on humans. And then they say AASs in the UK, controlled in the UK as a Class C substance under Part 3 of Schedule 2 of the Misuse of Drugs Act 1971 and Schedule 4. It is not an offense to possess AAS for personal use or to import or export, blah, 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 blah. But as we get into this further, they're saying that there is an
Whoa, 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 whoa. Well, first of all, they're fucking wrong.
that's not true.
It's an offence to import and has been since 2012.
Really?
Yes.
So this is so okay. I was going to skim past this to get to the fact to get to the meat of what the actual topic was. So this is an official study. Where's this thing published out of, Dave? Like what
Glasgow, I think. Glasgow Uni, I think it was.
Is that a big is that a
Yeah, Glasgow's a decent uni. I know a guy that works with them up there. Let me get it up because I've tried binning it because it depressed me.
Okay.
Did you email it me or did
I
you?
emailed it to you. Yeah.
Well, it must have been that bad. I think I've deleted it. hang on,
You
let
said,
me
"What's
check.
this shite?" And then you deleted it.
Yeah, I think I was looking at the wrong email.
Oh,
Hang
let's
on.
see. The university, it says correspondences. Is that what you're looking for on there? Carey
There we
Mullen,
go.
School of Computing, Engineering, and Physical Sciences, University of the West of Scotland.
Yeah, so it's Paisley, which is in Glasgow, or suburb of Glasgow.
Okay.
So, School of Computing, School of Computing, Engineering, and Physical Sciences is hardly really the hub of steroid research in the world, is it?
I don't know. I don't live over there. I don't read studies.
Well, I didn't think. Well, it's computer. Do you do steroids on your computing course or on your engineering course?
Not personally.
Actually, it's the School of Chemistry, Food and Nutritional Sciences at the University of Reading. So it looks like this is various PhD people across several universities.
Okay.
So the School of Life and Medical Sciences, University of Herefordshire, and the School of Chemistry, Food and Science and Pharmacy, University of Reading, and the Centre for Health, Exercise and Science, Research, Development and Sport, Physical Education and Health, Hong Kong Baptist University, Kowloon Tong, Hong Kong.
Okay.
God knows which one of them four is from there. I mean, straight away, legally, it's wrong.
So it says it right in there. Yeah, it says in section 3 AASs in the UK, it says it is not an offense to possess AASs for personal use or to import or export AASs if they are intended for personal use. That
No,
that's no
no,
longer true. So that
no.
it was so you're telling me in the past I could go to like Thailand, fill up a suitcase, and as long as I said, "Hey, this is all for me," they'd let me right in.
You can still bring it in personally.
Okay.
It's down to border control whether they decide the amount you have is personal use or not.
Okay.
But you can't import it through the postal system. You can't export it through the postal system. That was banned in 2012.
Oh, really?
So they're a bit. They could argue, oh, we only meant personal people. Well, then clarify. This is supposed to be a scientific paper. This is supposed to be a study overview. Clarify. Now, I've said to you before, my big argument with researchers is researchers that are lazy fucks and research for the sake of research and regurgitating absolute bullshit that's already been done. And this is what this is. This is an absolute pile of fucking crap that tells you nothing new and just goes over and throughout the whole paper, it constantly quotes other studies. At no point do they make any assumptions of their own. At no point have they done any research of their own. And at no point do they show any understanding in the real world sense of this topic whatsoever. All they've fucking done is parrot repeated other people's work. This, to me, is typical of lazy fucks that don't want to do the work and are just looking for some fucking funding to churn out some absolute fucking bullshit. And that's what that piece of paper is. It's bollocks, all of it. There's stuff that's way out, there's stuff that's incredibly dated, They make no conclusions against conflicting evidence. Huh. They quote studies from 2002, 2008, 2000, and they don't context any of it.
I see.
Some of this stuff's changed.
Some of it's good. I like this part. He says, or this person says, let's see, readily available online and purchased from friends or gym associates. There is no perception of duplicitous dealing, violence, or organized crime. The general public, however, do not share this perception, perhaps driven by the injectable nature of AAS. The general public are likely to stigmatize AAS users as they would hard drug users. I do think that that's interesting. I like that.
Yeah, well, and that's true, but that's not their work. They've just repeated another study that they've read.
Okay.
I understand that an overview of the review is a review of studies, but I think that when you review a study, you should put some personal review into that.
Okay.
You should add context to that. Mm. You should say, you know, this is a study from 2002, and current research would suggest that maybe this isn't quite the case, or this still stands true. They don't. They just repeat bollocks that's been said before. Mm. I mean, the bottom section four, ASS user demographics. I know Chandler and McVeigh very, very well.
Okay.
In fact, Chandler was one of the people that got me into this shit.
Really?
Yeah, Martin Chandler is a mate of mine. Hmm. Very good at making chocolate. Makes some incredible chocolate.
Chocolate, no kidding. Could we?
Yeah, he's giving up now.
Could we have him on to maybe do like a whole thing about making chocolate? We won't even talk about steroids.
I agree. Honestly, mate, it's fantastic.
Really?
He runs a climbing center now. He's not really doing anything to do with steroid use anymore.
Okay.
I mean, in 2013, adult males users discourage younger men from ASU to at least 21 years of age. That's not really happening anymore. Yeah, senior users will discourage younger use, but there's thousands and thousands and thousands of 19, 20, and 21-year-olds using. Hmm. It's generally more looked at people of 16, 17 that would be discouraged. When people start getting 18, 19, 20, 21, it's like you're an adult, do what you want.
Okay.
You know, that doesn't really stand true anymore. Not the way it used to. You know, those lines have softened a lot. And I mean, they came out with that in 2013. That's 7 years old.
This is interesting. They said at least someone else's information that they put here. It says the general, you know, I mentioned about how perception may be different by the public versus by the users and what's actually going on. They say that AAS users are looked at as being, they're rated as being more harmful than the class A substances, ecstasy, LSD, buprenorphine, and certain mushrooms. That people think that those things are steroids are more dangerous than people who are using those drugs.
Yeah, I mean, I got into this conversation the other day with somebody, and it's, I would say they're about the same.
Yeah.
I would say the health risks are about the same. One of the things that makes people view, general public particularly view steroids as being more harmful is because you inject them.
Okay.
And we've been socially exposed to cocaine and ecstasy for a very long time. We've seen it in cultural films.
Sure.
You know, we've much more. You don't see steroid use coming up in cultural films very often. I mean, look at what was the film? Trainspotting.
Yes, I remember that.
Which was heroin.
Yeah.
But, you know, we've had films looking at the rave scene, and we have films where cocaine use is often depicted in certain crime dramas and stuff like that. You often see characters in that using cocaine. So it's softened the impact of that drug because the exposure has been continuous through all sorts of social media and all aspects of life. Whereas steroids is still very much hidden from public view.
Yeah.
So the public hasn't got their heads around what it is or what it does. I mean, this is another thing. The last estimate in England and Wales was that 411,000 adults had used ASS. Home Office 2008. That doesn't account the study that was done last year, which put it at 1 million, and recognized that that was a low figure for what was actually being used.
Okay, wow.
So, you know, this is. I'm not arguing about the content that's in this, because the content in this isn't theirs. My big issue with this paper is that all they have done is regurgitated other people's work.
Yeah.
And they've not done it in a reflective manner. They've not analyzed other people's work and questioned whether that work is correct or still relevant. They've just repeated it.
I see. Yeah.
And to me, this is just like copying your mate's homework. You know, there's no thought, there's no intelligence. And this is a case of, we've got some funding to do a study. Let's be real lazy twats and not actually do anything.
Yeah.
Let's just read loads of studies that are currently there, which though takes time and is labor intensive, requires no actual effort in new research or getting involved in the community or trying to find out what's really going on.
Sure.
And so for argument's sake, the number, already we had a paper come out last year that contradicts that quite massively. Mm. Then you've got to look at the dispensing numbers, 2014, 2015, 2016. How is that relevant in 2020?
Hmm.
They're 4 years old.
Yeah.
What shit does that do? And again, there's no objective overview of what they're reading.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, it talks about how over two-thirds of NSP new clients, which is like harm reduction centers, needle exchanges.
Okay.
Are AAS users, and up to 80% six of clients overall.
Hmm.
And then it goes on about sources, and some users may embark on needle or syringe reusing and sharing. When have you ever, apart from maybe in a prison environment, seen guys sharing needles?
I have never seen that once.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It makes no comment about users buying online.
Oh, no, it does.
Not in this section here.
Oh, okay. I see that in a couple spots where they talk about I'd have to scroll back up, but there was a couple spots where they were saying that you know, it's sold online from websites that either say that they specialize in medical products or fitness health products. But they also mentioned that they don't always contain the doses that they suggest.
No. I'm on about needles.
Oh, needles. Okay.
They make no reference to the fact that the vast majority of users purchase their needles online.
I see. Okay.
So, it again, points a totally different picture. So what this is saying, unless users are getting their injection kit from a needle exchange,
yeah,
they're reusing and sharing, which is absolute fucking bollocks.
Yeah. As far as I know, most people over there don't go to the needle exchange. Like,
that's 70% buy.
Yeah.
Because it costs next to nothing.
Yeah. And if it's cheap, why bother yourself with going to the needle exchange and getting involved with all that? And
exactly.
I could see that. So, yeah.
This is where I get offense with shit like this, because what you have is four people who have no understanding of the subject matter they're looking at, have no in-depth understanding of what's going on in the world of steroids, and read some bollocks by somebody else and assume it's correct.
Yeah.
They don't question it. And straight away, so far, we've got a legal thing that's wrong, we've got the volume of use wrong, and we've got information about where the needles are coming from that's wrong, and we're only four pages in.
Hmm. Okay.
I like reviews if they are a review. To me, the nature of a review is that you look at the information that's been currently provided.
Yeah.
You condense it into one piece, so you're not having to look at 19 million different papers, but you also review its relevance in what's currently known.
Yeah.
And it's obvious that these four people don't know their ass from their elbow when it comes to steroids.
No.
Because there is no reflection. There is no, there is a high incidence of injection site infection injury reported in ASS users. Quantify that, because I haven't seen that many abscess cases this year. Couple, maybe. You know, it's, and no, I don't see everything, far from it, and I realize that, but generally when people fuck up, I do hear about it.
Yeah.
You know, it's just so wrong in so many places. But anyway, the fact that people site inject because they feel it's going to have a localized anabolic injection, not because they're using that much gear, they need to open new sites.
Yeah.
Just.
All right. Well, listen, let's close the book on this one.
Apparently, site injection causes paralysis.
Really?
Yeah.
All right. I know you could keep going, Dave. Let's close the book on this one because we have a bunch of questions. We'll take a quick break. We're gonna let Dave cool down a little bit, and then we're going to come back.
It winds me up.
And we're going to answer your questions. We'll be back in just a minute, guys. Hey, guys. Why are you using sports nutrition that was designed for someone else? At TrueNutrition.com, they offer the world's largest selection of quality protein powders, and they let you design your own custom blend from a variety of powders, flavors, boosts, and packaging options, like the Team Skip blend, for instance. That's over 20 billion possible combinations to create a protein powder tailored to your diet, your goals, your tastes, and your budget. TrueNutrition.com also offers the ability to create delicious custom oatmeal blends. And they're third-party tested, proving that all their supplements are ensured to have the highest level of quality and value. Don't be a sucker and pay for fancy packaging and gimmicks. Discover the source that bodybuilders trust and stop using mass-produced nutrition that wasn't designed for you. TrueNutrition.com. And use our code ADVICES at checkout to let them know that you support the shows.
This. Oh. Self you. You was going to trigger me.
That was great.
I hate you, Scott. McDonald.
That was amazing. All right, here we go.
Himself.
All right, composure. All right, guys, welcome back to Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland. And let's see here. I've got a question here. This came up initially at our YouTube page, and I'm glad that he came over. He posted at the Advices Radio group. Guys, if you're watching this on YouTube, we also have a I'm crying. I was laughing so hard here. We also have a everything's on audio as well. So you could search advicesradio.com or Advices Radio on your favorite podcast app. Our shows are there. We have a group called Advices Radio at Facebook. You're welcome to join, ask questions there. And this is the best way for us to see your questions. So Andy went ahead and did that. He shared his question over there. And he wanted your opinion specifically, Dave. He says, I homebrew my own gear, but small quantities of raws, and convert to injectable or liquid orals, strictly for personal use. Started this because I got a lot of underdosed gear. Now my supplier has upped the minimum quantity of order to 100 grams. This has me worried. I need the argument this is for personal use for if I get caught one day. I feel like 100 grams would be considered too much for personal use, or am I being paranoid here, Dave?
Which country do we know?
No, not offhand.
It's borderline at that. It really is. I have argued in defense on homebrew cases that...
Oh, Belgium.
Right. The thing is, he has the potential with the volume of drug that he has to obviously manufacture enough for sale.
Okay.
So from a point of view of avoiding or trying to create a scenario where if he does end up becoming subject to the long arm of the law, that he has a defensible case would be the fact that he makes sure his capability in other areas of production is as low as they can be.
Okay.
So if he's got a 100 mega test, do not brew up a 100 mega test. Brew up 20, leave the rest to one side. You know, no labels, no price lists, nothing of that nature. Don't start labeling your product because you think it looks fancy, even though it's only for you.
That's a good point.
Just get a magic pen, you know, a fucking Sharpie, and write on what it is, and that's all you need to do. Because otherwise, you start to look like a production situation.
Yeah.
I have argued in case that there are, to a degree, limitations on how small a package a home brewer can buy, and that traditionally, there was a point when suppliers wouldn't sell less than 500 grams.
Wow. Yeah, that'd be a lot of powder.
And then it went down and it went to 200, then 100, and then we started seeing 50 and 20 gram parcels being allowed to be sent.
Yeah.
I'm being told now, I'm not sure how reliable this is, that the Chinese are looking at coming back online fairly full production once the coronavirus bollocks is dealt with. But that they will be more re less likely to supply small parcels anymore,
Okay.
which is going to be a problem because the figure I heard was 5 kilograms. I can't see any UGL bringing in a 5 kilo parcel of gear or not be, or being uncomfortable doing it
Yeah.
because that's just too
That's a
large,
lot.
particularly with the risk of exposure of that size of parcel. I think market will force them back down to reasonable levels, but it may damage the homebrew market quite substantially. What you might find is that homebrewers are forced then to buy their powders from labs.
Okay.
But yeah, 100 is not beyond the realms of argument. But you are starting to get onto the end of stuff where your manufacturing capability does start to go up. So it's just a case of being sensible about the rest of the production. If you're brewing for yourself, though it may be a pain in the ass, stick with bottle top filters. Don't go to a filtration system because it has a commercial capability.
Okay.
Don't start buying into a kit that's going to give you more production facilities. Yes, it might be easier, but it also proves that you have a larger manufacturing capability. And if you've got larger amounts of raw powder, everything starts to tie.
Yeah.
Well, if you've got large amounts of raw powder, but you've only got 50 vials, you've got no labels, you've got a bottle top filter system, anyone with half a brain cell is going to struggle to argue that's going to support a commercial operation because you just can't fucking make enough
Yeah, that makes sense.
in a reasonable manner. So if the raws is out of control, you may have to look at others. The other thing is, beyond the point of discovery at importation, there is nothing to say that he has to keep 100 grams of raw powder.
You could sell it. Is that what you're saying?
Share it with somebody else.
You're going to say just convert it into an oil-based product. Put it into several different bottles, label it up, and then give it to your friends for $50 a pop. No?
Then
No?
no.
Oh.
But what he could do is dispose of it.
You don't dispose. That's
Right.
like alcohol abuse when you dump beer out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but at the end of the day, he says his reasons for buying in raw is to ensure he gets a viable product.
Yeah,
Yes?
true.
He's already probably paying quarter or a third of what he used to pay for a vial.
Sure.
So if he has to dump half his raw powder to make the quantities that he has at home safe in case of investigation to prove his argument that it is only homebrew, he's still saving money on what he would be if he was buying from a UGL.
I still think, though, his main point of getting in trouble would have been when it
Importation bill,
exactly
yeah.
when it enters the country.
So the main thing is just to make sure that you don't have stock, you don't have stock of product, don't be buying 5,000 vials because it's cheaper. Buy them in small quantities
Yeah.
and make sure that everything else of your operation reflects a low volume personal production.
That's good. I like that. And that's still no guarantee, right?
No, it's not, but it gives you an argument.
Yeah.
End of day, if I'm in I am thinking in Belgium, he's still breaking the law anyway, it's homebrew.
Yeah.
But at least you've got an argument there to sustain what you're really doing.
Yeah.
The other thing is, email your supplier and get in writing from them, we only sell minimum amount.
Yeah.
So if the shit does hit the fan, you can say it's the smallest amount I could buy it in. There's the email telling you so.
Yeah, there you go.
And if there's no other evidence supporting supply,
Yeah.
there's no money, there's no labels, there's no price list,
Yeah.
they're gonna have a difficult case to prove supply.
Huh, interesting.
Particularly when you're admitting personal manufacture.
Yeah.
It's still an offence, but obviously it's a lower grade when it comes to sentencing.
Yeah.
And I've done cases like this, the legit homebrew cases where they've tried to go at them as a commercial enterprise.
Really? Really?
Yeah. And, you know, the onus is on, well, in the UK, I mean, I'm not very familiar with the Belgium court system, but I would assume the basis of the same. The onus is on them proving that was your intent.
Yeah.
And if your intent was not that, then your evidence will support that. If your intent was that, then the evidence will support that as well. So you're just bullshitting yourself. But, you know, you've just, if what you're truly doing, then make sure that what you're doing reflects that.
All right. We got another question here. TRT, HRT with DECA. He says, question for Think Big Bodybuilding Media, DECA dose as part of one's TRT, HRT. Has anyone seen low-dose DECA with TRT negatively affect cholesterol values? My training has been inconsistent of late, so can't comment much if it's helping there, but it has helped with DOMS, lots of DOMS when training inconsistently. Lots of DOMS when training inconsistently, but like most guys 40 plus, lower back pain is an issue, and DECA is great for that. Cheers. How is DECA for cholesterol and cholesterol levels, Dave?
It's about the same as test.
Okay. So it's not going to help you in any way.
Well, you're increasing the overall dose. I mean,
yeah.
Look, you know, adding DECA to... adding DECA to a TRT means it's not TRT.
Well, it could be, right?
Well, testosterone replacement therapy. What part of that says DECA?
Sure. How about HRT?
Hormone replacement therapy. Where is DECA naturally formed in a male or female body?
Isn't there a small percentage? I thought there was a very small amount. Shut up.
Scott McNally, shut up. I appreciate the essence of what they're saying in that they are running very low doses just to help a little bit with joint health and everything else.
Yeah.
Does he specify the doses he's running?
He did not. He just said low dose. Low dose is part of one's TRT, HRT. I know that VJ, my partner for Bodybuilding Nerds Radio, he was doing like, I can't remember what it was. I want to say it was like 80 tests with 60 DECA. That was from his doctor. So it was It was very low.
If you're doing it in that, the issue becomes more than anything with adulterin. So adulterin against cholesterol or, you know, estrogen rising and stuff like that is as soon as you cross that threshold of normal values.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as you start moving above normal values, then these issues start to magnify.
Yeah.
So with a test DECA split, under TRT dosing, chances are you're not going to see any major problems whatsoever. And yeah, you could be fairly fine. I'd be a little bit concerned about DHT against DHN. Mm. I don't know how well that would be long term. Short term, 12, 16 weeks, probably not a problem. But if you're going to start moving into 6 to 8 months, you might find you start to have a few problems downstairs.
Okay.
And that would be very person dependent. But if you start moving dosing so that you're going above range, you'll start getting problems with RBC. You'll start getting problems with, you know, basically all your full blood count. And you'll start getting problems with cholesterol and potentially estrogen, depending on how you aromatize.
Hmm.
So, to me, that's the key management area, is that threshold of range.
Yeah.
When you start going above range, then you move out of anything that's therapeutic and you start moving in super pharmacological. That's when you'll start to see other aspects within the body start to respond.
I could see that, sure.
Because I've always been a fan of single dose.
Yeah.
On TRT. I like the instability it creates, but at the same time, there is a negative side to that, because you spend a period of time above range, you increase the risk of your RBC going higher, you increase the risk of your estrogen getting a little bit higher, because it will respond when it jumps out of range.
Mm.
If you microdose consistently, then you don't get above range, and so you don't start to trigger these reactions.
Okay.
Personally, to me, the ideal way would be a fast actor like prop, or ideally, if you could have something that was in between base and prop, that'd be perfect. And then doing everyday injections would be the ideal way. So you had a natural peak and trough every day.
Okay.
But, you know, so it swings and roundabouts. There's benefits to going one way against benefits of going the other way. But like I said, the main thing is that when you start pushing above range for extended period of times, even if it's 3-4 days of the week or 7 days of the month, you're going to start to see other areas that steroids trigger start to respond.
Okay. We have a few more questions here that people have asked during the show, so I'll start going through these. Matt Spina says, Dave had commented on one of the last shows that DIM would be his bare minimum for estrogen control. Could he elaborate on the effectiveness of DIM when using it to control estrogen on TRT, and what and at what dosage is it effective?
I can't.
Okay.
Because I'm still learning.
Okay. I'll tell you what I know then.
I'm running it with somebody at the moment with that express idea to see how effective it is.
Yeah.
So I've just done a set of bloods with them, and we'll do another set in 3-4 weeks to see where we're at. My experience with DIM so far has been anecdotal.
Okay.
So it's come from other people reporting that it was quite helpful when they were on TRT dosing.
Yeah.
So I'm now doing some bits and bats to see for myself.
Okay. Here's what I'll tell you. I found, so for TRT, I've used DIM, first of all. I've liked DIM as a supplement to help, from what I understand, to help eliminate unhealthy estrogens. So it's been great. Where I've used it a lot is with female competitors. A lot of the girls that I work with are natural. Even the girls that I've worked with at the pro level, they have been natural and they haven't used any type of estrogen blocker. You know, a lot of times in physique type sports, females will use an estrogen blocker like a Nolvadex to get a drier, harder look and to help with fat loss, you know, in the lower half especially. We've used DIM for that, starting at 200 milligrams, working up to 400 milligrams at the most for a period of time. And I found that to be effective. I've also used IC3, which is, it's almost like, I believe that it's a different metabolite. It will break down slightly differently. And one of the things it breaks down into is DIM. My brain's a little foggy here at the moment, but the things that I found to be most effective is instead of using more DIM, using a combination of IC3 and DIM together. But that said, for estrogen management without using drugs on TRT, calcium degluconate is fucking killer. And I've seen that work so effectively that it has lowered estrogen too far, that we needed to back off of it. So I'm a big fan of calcium degluconate. In fact, that's one of the things that I had experimented with it myself, and I've seen results with it. I've used it with clients. I've seen results with them using it. I think that there's could be even a balance between all three of these things, between IC3 and DIM and calcium degluconate. So I'd throw that out there. I'd start with one, you know, one of the three. And personally, I would start with the calcium. From what I understand, it's not an anti-estrogen. What it does is it just makes your body more effective at getting rid of the estrogen. And so for that reason, it doesn't have as much of a buildup.
I mean, with TRT, you're wanting a mild action, aren't you? You know, if you're starting to play around, I think ADEX and those sort of drugs on TRT are far too harsh. And obviously, you've got the worry of the long-term cholesterol issues.
Yeah.
Talking about other alternatives to manage things, I'm getting some impressive results of vitamin B6 with people on cycle.
Really? Really?
So much so, I'm having to reduce the dose.
Okay. Oh, I'll throw in with the dose, the calcium, 500 milligrams to start, and you can work up from there. I know people that are using like 2 grams. What kind of dosing on B6?
500 milligrams per
Okay.
day, and I've seen people running cycles in the region of 250 megatest, 600 megadeca, and their prolactin has been coming back at sub 50.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So we've had to back off, and that's becoming quite consistently as well. But it seems to have a better effect if you start it prior to starting a cycle.
Really?
It seems to not be as effective if you try and bring it in once prolactin is already elevated.
Yeah.
But yeah, very effective. I've been pleasantly surprised.
All right. Let's see. Next question here. I'm not sure about this one. This is from Austin. He says, idea of the mechanism of ACE inhibitors causing or being correlated with muscle protein synthesis. Where's he going with that?
I don't know.
We
You're
don't.
reading it. You've done enough winding me up to one day without.
We'll get back to you. So I don't know anything about this. ACE inhibitors causing or being correlated with muscle protein synthesis. Is there an effect, a
The.
negative effect on muscle protein synthesis when using an ACE inhibitor?
I honestly don't know.
Huh. Well, you got us, Austin.
Let me look.
All right. We'll find out about that one for the next show. Anything else here?
Don't forget, we keep forgetting to actually revisit these
We do. We do.
things.
Oh, we got one more here, and it's another TRT question. If you are on TRT amounts of testosterone, do you advise periodically stopping use? Why or
No.
why not? Why not
Well, why
then?
would you?
Yeah.
You're replacing your body with a hormone that it requires because you can no longer produce that hormone for whatever reason.
Yeah.
So why would you then stop giving your body the essential hormone that it needs to function correctly?
Sure.
It doesn't make sense
No.
unless you're running above TRT doses in your TRT. If you're replicating TRT correctly, you should have no reason to give your body a break, so to speak.
Yeah.
And you shouldn't be getting levels of blood count or estrogen or anything else for that matter that are problematic.
Yeah.
You may need a little bit of low-level management, but they shouldn't be coming problematic. If they are, there's something going a bit spurious.
Dave, did I tell you how much it costs for me to do that phlebotomy through a phlebotomist?
You sent me a piece of paper which had a really big number on it, and I just thought, you've got to be taking the piss.
I thought they were too. I got to call Garden City
And did
Hospital.
you pay that?
Not yet, but apparently I'm going to. I mean, unless you can argue it for me somehow. Can I connect you to them?
I can send you a bag over at a fraction of the cost.
I could do it my well, believe me, that's what I'm thinking I'm gonna have to do next time, man. So guys, I got my bill for my therapeutic phlebotomy. This is going to a hematologist. Before insurance, it was like 500 and something dollars. Insurance paid like 100 and something dollars. They want me to pay 300 and something dollars to have removed 400 milliliters of blood.
So that's over $100 per 100 milliliters.
Wow. It's crazy, man. I didn't realize it was going to be that expensive. I figured if anything, cost of the equipment, maybe the cost of the time, $100 maybe, right? No. $500.
500 for a fleb.
Yeah.
It would have been cheaper for you to fly here, get us to do it, and fly back.
Damn. I'll justify that next time. Mrs. Crossland can take my blood out and it'll still save money. So
Nigh on.
we'll be able to do drugs and stuff live. I could sit next
That'd
to
be
you.
fun.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah, you can hug.
Yeah.
And we can watch the blood just drain out of your body into a bag.
Yeah, we got to make sure. That's why she's got to be there to make sure we don't forget. Because we get talking, and before you know it, an hour goes by, just like it has for this show, and I'd be dead or close to.
We've had some famous people in this clinic this week.
Have you really? Can you tell us about any of them, or is that under the wraps?
Treatment room.
Treatment room, sorry. I get shouted at for calling it a clinic.
Oh, so it's not a clinic treatment room.
It's a treatment room,
Okay.
yes.
Who's been there? Dennis Rodman?
Not telling you.
Donald Trump.
No, I'm not telling.
All right, well, let's get out of here, guys. Anything else, Dave?
I hate you. You sent me that study deliberately because you knew it would trigger me. You knew it would go off
Truly, I didn't, but I was amazed. That was fantastic.
You horrible man. Because now I'm going to be ranting in my head about that for the next three,
Oh,
4 hours.
I thought here's no, don't do that because here's what we did. You had the opportunity to get it out. You got it all out. You got it out to hundreds and thousands of people on the radio. And you're done. You don't need it. You don't need to carry it around anymore. You let it go, Dave.
What do you reckon, Footy? Footy says. Pfft.
All right, guys, for another episode of Drugs and Stuff with Dave Crossland, head on over to crosslands.org.uk. Check out all of his services, visit his treatment room, get some phlebotomy done. And of course, guys, check out truenutrition.com. Use our code ADVICES. Everything's third-party tested, high-quality supplements. Dave, until next time, my friend, see you later.
Take care.